Welcome to Grow Your Influence, leadership conversations for business owners and managers. Whether you own a business and have a team, or leadership is part of your role, welcome, you're exactly where you need to be. Join co-hosts Juliette Robinson and Christy Lee Billett for their regular conversations on all things leadership. No corporate jargon, no textbook ideologies, just real life experience unpacked in a relaxed way to help you be your best boss and lead your team with confidence, clarity, and control. This is Grow Your Influence. Let's dive in. Juliette, hello. Great to see you again.
Christy Lee, lovely to see you. How are you going?
Great. Very busy. Lots going on. What about you?
Similar. I've had a lovely time running workshops in person lately, which after COVID just seems like such a delight. And I think that's really why this topic, I'm really excited about this topic today, because we're talking about leadership style, different ways that we lead.
Yeah.
And I've been having some great conversations with people who are very practical people, and as a result have sort of taken on leadership roles, which is so often the way. And so we've talked a lot about self-awareness and how we lead through all of this. So I think it's a really good thing to be talking about today. I think we can unpack some of this stuff.
Absolutely. And I think it's really interesting that there is such a wide variety of leadership styles, and people will generally have one that they gravitate towards, but then other people sort of create a leadership style that they think they should have, which is not necessarily their natural style. Sometimes they're modeling it off a leader that they've had in their career, or just what they think a leader should look like. And I find it really fascinating when someone tries on a particular leadership style that isn't their natural one, and the challenge that can be as well.
I totally agree. And sometimes people are just doing what's been role modeled for them.
Yeah.
So it might be the culture that they're in at the time, or just the only thing they've ever seen in terms of leadership. So yeah. As you say, even though they sort of know it's not right and they know it doesn't really work because they haven't enjoyed it,
yeah,
it's still the only thing they have to kind of reference when they take on leadership.
It's so true, and I think it's just human nature. I was listening to a podcast on a walk this morning, which was an ABC Conversations podcast, actually, and it was a story of a gentleman, and he basically said, I grew up to be the only person that I'd been role modeled to be, my father, which was not a good thing, and he knew it. And so I think there is an element of human nature that we just follow the leads that we have, particularly, I think, from a career perspective, in those leaders we have early in our career when we're really forming our thoughts and, you know, processes. I think back to my early leaders, and they're still the most influential leaders I had.
Yes, and I think that's the thing. I think the more we can do some of that reflection but also build our self-awareness, the more we can choose whether we want to do what we've seen modelled or whether we want to do something different.
We have a choice, don't we?
Yes, we do have a choice, but often we don't realise we have a choice. And I think, in these workshops, and I do a lot of work with the team management profile. I know you and I have talked about it a bit. Mm-hmm. And building that self-awareness for people around how they like to work and communicate is such an important first step. And I say to all of them, it doesn't matter what tool you use, find a tool that gives you some insight into how you work and communicate, because that will help you decide, is that how I want to be?
Yeah.
And it'll help you find your natural style as a leader, I think.
And I think importantly as a leader as well, sometimes we need to adapt our style to our team in order to get the most out of them, and to individuals within our team, but without having that insight by using some of these tools to really understand our team's preferences and how they communicate and how they want to be communicated with, we can't adapt our leadership style to suit completely. So I think it kind of can go both ways.
I think that's right. I've also seen with the introduction of the hybrid teams that has evolved for many through COVID, people who were sort of more relaxed as leaders were just letting everybody kind of do their thing, have had to get a bit more involved and have had to create a bit more structure around their leadership sometimes.
Yeah, that's fascinating you say that, because I was just on a call yesterday with a team who are having some struggles with their leadership, and that's the exact experience that they had. They tried to be so accommodating and flexible and approachable through COVID, and they were, and their team loved it. Yeah. But as they're now trying to get people back into an office and trying to get things back on track, they're struggling, and the team are struggling with a lack of leadership, and they're wanting structure. Yeah. And it's very, that's really interesting you say that, because that's the exact observation I had having this conversation with that leadership team yesterday.
It is, look, it is interesting, isn't it? And I think this is this, as you say, we need to be conscious of changing the way we lead to suit the situation. Yeah. And yeah, I've seen that a few times. The other thing I have seen, and I guess it was, I saw it more early on in the lockdowns in Melbourne with teams, was that some people who were quite, didn't have a lot of trust, really worried about being able to see their people, didn't trust that they were doing anything unless they could see them, have had to actually loosen their style and use other ways to understand and to trust that their people are working. And that's a huge transition as well. Moving from quite an autocratic kind of, you have to be at your desk for me to trust that stuff's getting done. Moving to that, okay, let's talk about what our end result is, and you do whatever it is that needs to happen for that to happen. And, you know, I don't need to see you all the time, which is a big change for people.
It was a big leap for a lot of people.
Totally, yes.
But I think it was a change that would have happened. It just might have taken 20 years, and we just had to get it done in 2 weeks.
Absolutely right, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely.
So let's unpack some of the leadership styles that we commonly see, and maybe listeners can start to self-identify whether this is their natural leadership style or something that they might want to lean a little bit more into. You mentioned one just then, autocratic. What does an autocratic leader look like?
Well, they tend to make the rules, and it tends to be their way or the highway, in my experience. So these are people who usually they've set up the business, in my experience. So they've done everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so they know they can do everything, and they can probably do it faster and smarter than everyone else anyway. So they really struggle to kind of let stuff go in the early days. And the only way they find comfort in letting stuff go is by kind of controlling as much as they possibly can. So
this is our business owners quite often.
Yeah. But it's also, you know, when we talk about multi-generational workforces, this was a model that was very common through, you know, the post-war period. So 40s, 50s, 60s, this was the model, really. Leaders tended to be quite autocratic.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very command and control sort of structure. And that's what people understood. That's what people had grown up with. So there was a lot more sort of discipline, in inverted commas, around the way things worked, and you know, very clear hierarchies and very clear processes and things. So I think that's a model that has over time become less and less palatable for most people.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I think it's very generational as well. So, you know, those of us, you know, that grew up in the workforce in that time, that was the expectation, and it was very much the expectation outside of work as well. You know, you respect your elders, all of those things were kind of part of the upbringing. So I think a lot of this does tie into generations and how they approach leadership as well. So definitely there's much less interest from certainly from employees in that style of leadership these days.
I think so. And look, even in its traditional heartland, in things like the Defence Forces, they are finding ways to integrate other aspects of leadership into that sort of command and control model.
Absolutely. I mean, Simon Sinek writes a lot about that kind of environment, and it's so very different now to what it was.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's your autocratic. What other styles do we have?
So there's a style they talk about as transformational.
Mm-hmm.
But these are big picture leaders, you know, and if we think about it in terms of something like a team management profile, these are people who are highly creative, blue sky thinkers, big picture. they don't necessarily want to do stuff. They want to come up with the ideas. So they're doing all of the, well, what if we, or how about we, or let's try,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so that they are the big picture, and they are inspiring their teams to, mm. you know, do things differently, to really try stuff that's out of the box. And they're enabling that.
Yeah. Yeah. This is Simon Sinek talks a lot about a CEO's title being misplaced, and they shouldn't be a chief executive officer. They should be a chief vision officer, and that yeah. the leader's role is to either construct or bring forward the vision and let everyone else deliver on that vision. And I think you think about leaders that people think are truly inspirational, you know, Steve Jobs, these kind of people.
Yeah,
that's really their style, isn't it?
Totally, yeah. Mm. They are bringing the big picture.
Yeah.
And they're bringing that, they are inspiring people through that,
mm.
you know, because people feel like it's possible. And they do feel like, you know, we talk about people needing to be connected with something bigger than themselves. For a transformational leader, you're not just connecting your people with something big, you're taking them on this journey, really, aren't you? You know, you're really laying out that we are going to be amazing.
Yeah,
and that's what people buy into, and that's what inspires them. So they really connect with the why they're there,
yep.
with a transformational leader. Yeah,
and I would argue that in this environment that we're in now, particularly with the younger generations coming through our workforces,
mm.
every leader needs to be able to tap into their transformational leader yeah. style.
Yeah.
From time. Even if it's not your natural style, I think you've got to have some ability to tap into it and to show up in that way, because we know more and more the younger generations coming through work want to be tied to something bigger. They want to not feel like a number, yes. like they're, you know, on purpose and part of something that is greater than them. Yes. And that's where transformational leadership is really important.
I agree, totally agree. And I think particularly at the moment where our workforce is so mobile,
mm.
you know, where people really can shift around if they want to, move jobs, change careers. Being a transformational leader, being able to step into that, yes, is critical
yep.
for connecting people with why they're there and why they should stay.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And I talk about, you know, when we talk about self-awareness and working with something like a team management profile, and I talk about this idea that, yes, we can do any of this stuff. It's a bit like signing our signature with the opposite hand, the hand mm. we don't use all the time. It's not very comfortable. We won't want to stay there for too long.
Yeah.
But we can absolutely do it. And I think you're right. I think for things like transformational leadership, we do need to step into that and think about it. Maybe, you know, I'm just going to go and sign my signature with the other hand
yeah.
for a while
yeah.
because I need to kind of inspire everybody and yeah. lay out that bigger picture.
Absolutely. And I think I see when this is missing in businesses, it can really impact culture. It can impact engagement. Yeah. It certainly impacts retention and turnover rates. So whilst it might be a short period of discomfort, the payoff is quite huge.
Yeah. I think the discomfort often is because if you're a leader who's very strong on detail and very strong on doing, you know, driving for outcomes the whole time, this can seem a bit fluffy. You know, why don't people just get on board?
Yes.
And I think that's where the challenge can come.
And I think too, for the, I say older generations, and I include myself in this,
yeah.
we didn't get that. We didn't need that to be motivated at work. So we kind of have this sense of, oh, you know, we have to pander like to the different generations. Yes.
Yeah.
So we've got to get that out of our heads as well.
I think so. Yeah, I think we really do. I think we need to start thinking differently about that vision, about the, you know, how we connect people
yeah.
with what we're doing. Yeah, and I think that is the key, that transformational leadership really sets out that bigger picture, that vision. Now, I think almost the opposite of that is that sort of very transactional leadership.
Right.
You know, leaders who, as I say, these are the people who are very focused on doing. Mm-hmm. And it's just, what are we doing and how well are we doing them? And are you doing it? You know, so they tend to struggle to connect with things like defining behaviours.
Yeah.
And they really just, well, are you hitting the mark or not?
Yeah.
And I know teams I've worked with where I've seen this in play,
mm.
peop- people really struggle, because while some people might also have similar sort of preferences in the way they work, so they're really focused on doing as well, there's almost inevitably people who are not as focused on that, or who have other ways of working and who feel really disconnected from the team, because there's no focus on the culture, on how we're working together, on how we make this work.
Definitely. So these leaders are very task focused.
Very.
And they're often put into leadership roles because they get stuff done.
Yeah.
So from a productivity perspective, if you're thinking about who you're going to promote, these are those people that will get promoted out of the ranks into leadership because they have this ability to stay on task, to be very great, communicators about what we've got on, work in progress, what the next goal is, and just keeping things moving. And I definitely see individuals get put into leadership roles because this is their natural style, and the perception is they're going to be a great leader because they're going to be super productive and make for a super productive team, which is true, but they are definitely lacking in those engagement strategies, in my experience, and the team really do tend to struggle because they don't feel like there's any room for conversation around anything other than tasks.
I think that's exactly right. So the team only gets together to discuss tasks and schedules and plans and things. There's no other conversation going on. And I think they just don't notice. People who are comfortable in this style of leadership, comfortable in that sort of just getting stuff done mode, often just don't notice the impact they're having on other people.
Yep.
It just doesn't occur to them because they're there to do a job. And aren't we all here to do a job? And I know when I talk with people about the team management profile, and there's one construct they measure is decision-making. On one end of the spectrum is analytical, and the other is belief-based. And on the analytical side, it's very much about facts and objectivity and, weighing up what we need to put in order to get what we want. And the other side is values-based, and you're bringing your personal values to it. And I know when I'm working with teams and there are highly analytical people in the room, they just look at you blankly. So what do you mean there's another way to make a decision?
Yeah.
How could you, why would you bring values to it? It's about the facts. How could you do it any other way? And I think this is where transactional leaders often come from this sort of perspective of it's just facts. We're just going to do the job.
Yeah.
Get on board and get out of the way.
Yeah.
And I think in a team setting, it doesn't take long for people to go, I've got no idea what's going on here. Or I don't feel connected at all. I'm going to go find connection somewhere else.
That's what's missing. It's that connection. It's that sense of belonging. That doesn't happen when you've got a transactional leader.
Absolutely, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Are there any, so we've spoken about autocratic, transformational, transactional. What's maybe one more leadership style that you see?
Well, I think the democratic style, which, and we talked earlier, because there is a style called laissez-faire, which is, I think, those leaders who tend to just let things happen.
Mm.
We'll just bubble along, basically, and I'm sort of here, but I'm, I don't need to be across everybody.
Mm.
And I think this is where we've seen the rise of a democratic leadership style through this hybrid team, because that's no longer really working. When your team is dispersed, when there's uncertainty about how things work, you need to be really quite engaged with them and you need to be guiding them. And the democratic style, I think, comes into play here because it involves a whole lot more conversation, a whole lot more what's going to make this team work. How do we want to be doing this?
So is a democratic style more consultative in their approach?
Yeah, definitely. But it has to be led. Leaders still have to lead that conversation and know where they want to take it. But it's definitely about engaging more with our people.
So
in contrast to somebody who's very transactional, a democratic leader is having those conversations about how do we do what we do, and how do we want to do it better?
Yeah. Getting input and, I definitely feel like we're seeing more and more of that. And I feel like sometimes the democratic leader is a little too, can be a little bit of a reluctant leader. They're in a leadership role, but they don't want to make all the decisions necessarily. So they get the team involved in the decision-making so that it's not all on their shoulders sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I think this is really difficult, though, for lots of leaders because it requires some self-awareness and some listening skills and some ability to guide people, you know, and for democratic leadership to really work, you have to have trust in the team so that you know people will speak up when things aren't going well,
yeah,
or they'll tell you what needs to change. And I think unless we build trust in the team, and I know we've talked about this in the past, people aren't going to do that if they fear that they're going to be sidelined or in some way marginalised in the team speaking out, then they're not going to challenge them. So I think it can be really challenging for leaders to do this well. But I think this is where things are heading, and I think more and more the expectation from people, and particularly, as I say, the younger generation coming through, is that they'll be involved in conversations about how stuff happens.
And they want to be. They want to be involved. So I think it's important. So I think interesting.
I think that is the one I'm really seeing, and you're obviously seeing it too. It's emerging out of this uncertainty. People want some guidance, but they still want connection. So they're not looking for that sort of autocratic, don't involve anybody, just tell them what to do style. They're looking to have a say in the conversation.
And I'm seeing leaders that have been autocratic, been transformational, really try and be more democratic. And sometimes it's working for them, sometimes it's not. I think there is a tipping point where they go a little too far and they're getting the team involved in too many decisions and the team almost see the direction, and that's when we have to pull it back, because that you've, like you pointed out, you've still got to be the leader. So there is a little slippery slope there, but the intention, I think, is to get the team involved. And yesterday I was talking to a company about values setting, and I said to the business owner, these are your values. We're going to get team involved in how these values play out in their roles. And she said, oh, no, I want to get the team involved in setting the values. No. Because they'll be gone in 2 years' time. You will not. I thought that was really interesting. And she actually said to me, they've never really called myself the business owner. And she's like, this is a very successful business. And I think I just said it like it was normal, but I think to her that was actually a little confrontational. And she just sees this business as a thing that she happens to kind of steer. But I found it really interesting. But that's when it can go too far. You don't want the team in control of the direction.
No. And really, you want the team involved in building the culture. But you need to drive it as a leader, because otherwise that's a tiger you'll have by the tail as well, and it will be driving you. So, no, I totally agree. As a leader, there are things we absolutely need to drive. And I think are people generally looking for that. But they want to be involved in those conversations. So once your values are decided, talking with the team about what does it mean for how we behave, you know, when we're delivering on these values, that's a great conversation to have. You know, building a team charter with your team about how we want to work together and what's not okay. I think these are all good things to do with your team. And building that capacity to have feedback conversations, you know, give each other feedback without it being personal, but it just is about the good of the team and what you're doing. That's, you know, true democratic leadership at its best, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's a fine balance, but that's what we're going for.
And boundaries. When you were talking about the slippery slope, I was thinking, yes, and this is where boundaries come in, because as a leader, we need to know where our boundaries lie.
Absolutely. I really loved that conversation. I feel like there are more podcast episodes in this topic.
I think so. I wonder if we should unpack a few of these styles, and particularly maybe sort of moving from autocratic or laissez-faire into democratic.
I definitely think so.
What that transition looks like.
there might be a leadership styles series coming your way, listeners, so stay tuned. But if you would like to chat further about your leadership style or the leadership styles that you are seeing play out in your organisation, join us over on our Facebook page at Grow Your Influence. The link will be in today's show notes, but we would really love to hear your experiences and start a conversation around leadership styles with you.
Yes, we'd love to hear whether you struggle with any of these or whether you see yourself in any of them and what that means for how you lead.
Yeah, absolutely. Christy
Lee, lovely to see you.
You too, Juliet. See you next time.
Okay, bye.
Thanks for joining us on this episode. If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a rating, comment, and review wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to recommend us to a friend. We also love hearing suggestions for topics or guest speakers that you would love to hear from. The best way to reach us to give us those suggestions is over on our Facebook page. Simply head to Facebook and search Grow Your Influence. See you there.